everyone. I'm Beanie Cohn-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beanie Show. For those who of you that have been listening to the Ask Beanie Show for over 7 years, you know that I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. It is the definitive book for those of you who are really serious about assessing who your partner is and who your partner is not before committing to any serious relationship. I'm also a columnist. In fact, I am the new advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons. And I'm really excited about this because people are starting to comment and they're starting to send me in some questions that I'm going to be able to share with you. I'm also a national speaker. And of course, I've been in national radio and television now for over 25 years. And, you know, one of the most favorite things that I do every single week is really hosting the Ask Beanie Show. I have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. And I'll tell you that mental health finally is a subject that people are talking about globally. We no longer have to put it in the closet and be embarrassed to talk about depression and anxiety and substance abuse and other psychiatric issues. And my show, The Ask Beanie Show, it is about empowerment. It is about all of the things that we can do, or at least try to do every single day, to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. So as you know, we talk about mental health issues, we talk about sexuality, relationships, and basically how and what to do to maximize our physical and our emotional well-being despite the stressors of life that we all experience. So my mantra, and I want it to be your mantra, regardless of the issues that get in the way of your life and your relationships, the most important thing is that we need to acknowledge that there is an issue, that there is a problem, whether or not it is with depression or anxiety or your relationship with alcohol or with other drugs. And then we need to be serious. And this is something I say to my patients every single hour. We need to be serious about wanting to address the things, the old things, the new things, our past issues stemming from our original family of origin. And in acknowledging and in addressing and taking whatever steps we need to take to resolve things as best as we can, those are the things that we really need to do that can make all the difference in the world in how we live our lives. Because people are really suffering. I mean, I continue to talk about every single week the depression statistics. 17 million adults in the United States suffer from clinical depression. Anxiety disorders, 40 million Americans suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And of course, the domestic violence statistics. 3 to 4 women are killed every single day by their intimate partner. And if we're looking at suicide statistics, I was looking at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control statistics. And, you know, it's a fact that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. for all ages. And suicide, and this is a number that really is so concerning to me as a therapist and as a mother, it is the second leading cause of death in the world for those age 15 to 24. And you may not know this, but suicide rates for females are highest amongst those ages 45 to 54. So we all have, look, we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And all I can tell you is that therapists and people in mental health, we are not immune from the stressors of life as well. And if you're looking at the divorce statistics, and I repeat this statistic every single week, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages end in divorce. And, you know, one would really hope that after marriage number one and marriage number two, that we would see a difference, that we would see a positive difference in the divorce statistics. However, my friends, the reality is that 74% of third marriages also end in divorce. And as you know, I talk about relationships a lot. And, you know, I have great news that I love to share with people really worldwide. And I have through my research and through my books, and of course, over 35 years of clinical practice, I have clarity about what we do need to actually do, not just think about or fantasize, if we ever hope to have a successful relationship with anyone. And, you know, despite all, because you have to look at the facts, and I'm really a very bottom line person. We have more self-help books out there than ever before. We have programs that are dealing with relationships, and we have coaches, and we have therapists, and we have so-called relationship experts, and we have a multitude of shows on Netflix and on television and podcasts. And yet, what is it that is going on that we are not seeing a difference in the divorce rates, in the domestic violence rates? And for me, when I am presenting my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again programs to people throughout the United States and Canada, I want people to really take this in, because these are the things that can really make all the difference in the world when it comes to your life and your relationships. So I think every single week it is worthwhile repeating. So if you are ever going to have a successful love relationship with anyone, who is the person, who is the most important person in your life that you need to love? So think about it. Just think about it. It's not your mother and father and brother and friends and lover. It really begins with you. Which is why each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we need to be willing, we need to be serious to deal with our own issues. Maybe it's the depression that you've had for many, many years. Perhaps you were an unfortunate person who was sexually abused as a child, or you have had issues with sexual assault, or alcohol, or drugs, or a lot of different things that come up in our lives that really can play havoc with our lives. And we need to be honest with ourselves, and we need to realize that we cannot just pretend that the history, that the skeletons in our closet aren't there. They are there. And I talk a lot about skeletons in the closet and unfinished business. And I think it would be a wonderful thing if we didn't need to go back and we didn't need to look at our history and we didn't need to look at some of the terrible, terrible trauma that many people, many patients that I treat here in New York City and also in East Hampton have sustained throughout their lives. And yet, as a practicing psychotherapist for all of these years, I do not know. I have never figured out a way to not have to delve into our history. And of course, understanding, of course, that there is nothing that we can do about what did or did not occur in our past. However, what I can tell you is that there is a very, very effective way. There is a very effective process to help people emotionally work through as best as we can the issues, our unfinished business, so that we're finally able, at least for the most part, to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I talk a lot about lessons to be learned that we can really implement beginning today. And perhaps in your history, there are amends that you need to try and make. There's so much family estrangement that is going on in the world today. So again, it's your unfinished business and your skeletons in the closet that really do, I mean, they do hamper our being able to live happy and joyful lives. So that when, you know, people talk about therapy and they only talk about, you know, being in the present, and I'm all for cognitive behavioral therapy and behavioral therapy. And I wish that there was a way that we didn't need to go back, that we didn't need to look at some of our painful history. And yet I'll tell you something, that in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you'll ever want to know. Professionally, that's a whole different story. I am extremely, extremely patient. And I'll let you know this, that if I had found a way that we did not need to revisit the pain and the history and our family of origin traumas and early child sexual abuse and sexual assault and drug issues, I would have figured this out a long, long time ago. And the other thing I can absolutely definitively tell you is that when people go through this process, there is really, at the end, there is a relief to finally being able to really be honest with oneself and to not have to pretend that everything is really okay when in fact our history continues to get in the way of our present. So that's number one. If you're ever going to have a good relationship, we need to be okay. And our love affairs really do need to begin with ourselves. Number two, and I talk about this all the time, despite all the books and the shows, I think that people are still, for the most part, very unclear about the ingredients that really do need to be present in a long-term healthy relationship. For years, you know, I've been trying to get schools and colleges to implement serious relationship education courses. And I know that there are some here and there, but my patients are some of the nicest, smartest, best educated people that one would ever want to meet. And yet, again, what I'm seeing is that there is a lack of clarity about what good relationships really are and the ingredients that need to be present. And people are of all ages and stages in life. What I see in my practices is that they're continuing to struggle, certainly in their relationships, because of a lack of clarity of what really goes into having a great relationship. So again, we need to be okay. We need to be clear about the ingredients. And of course, people ask me all the time, Beanie, what do you think are the most important ingredients that make or break a relationship? And as unsexy as this sounds, it happens to be emotional communication and problem solving. And you want to be with someone who has the capacity to be emotionally intimate. In fact, I had a patient last night 25-year-old, beautiful, beautiful young woman. And she has an MBA and she has a great job and she travels around the world. And we were talking about her relationship with her boyfriend. And she was telling me how disappointed every single week she is in the relationship. And why is she so disappointed? She says that he is almost incapable of being able to express affection. And I'm not talking about sex, and is virtually incapable of being emotionally intimate, being able to say things like, I love you and I care for you, and it's so good to be with you, and I enjoy our time together, and I love our relationship. And we were talking about different love languages, and she says it's so strange because he'll cook her a great, great dinner. And for him, that is his way. That is his love language. Of expressing how he really feels about her. And yet in bed, we were also discussing their sex life. She was saying that he seemed so uncomfortable with kissing and touching and foreplay. And for him, and I think a lot of men, at least historically, believed that intercourse was the best way to bring a woman to orgasm. And of course, that's simply absolutely, not at all true. And, we were talking about what needs to be done. I mean, she's told him over and over again that she needs the physical affection, that she needs more than 2 or 3 minutes of physical foreplay before he is ready to have intercourse. And, what I said to her was, I thought it would be really, really helpful if he was willing to speak with me privately, because a lot of men believe that if you are a macho man, emotional foreplay is not so necessary, and the expression of affection and emotions is not manly. So I was really curious, and I am really, really curious about, what her boyfriend really learned about what it means to be a man, and why it is that he has such difficulty in being emotionally really present and expressive, and also physically present when it comes to affection. So, with a couple like this, to just really zero in on their sex life and on their techniques or lack of techniques, I think that we'd really be missing the boat. And I guess we're going to have to see, she's going to talk to him and see whether or not he would be willing to at least have one session with me to really try to figure this out, because she was saying she loves him, and yet the disappointment that she feels on an almost constant basis because of his something is getting in the way of his being able to relax enough and be emotionally present. Because it's one thing to be able to have sex. It's another thing to be able to feel comfortable with affection, with touching, and also with being touched. And that was something also interesting that she said to me, that he is uncomfortable with kissing and touching when it is not something sexual. So here we have, clearly, there is an issue, there is a problem. And the real question is he going to be willing to, acknowledge and address and resolve some of his own problems? And of course, the other part of this is she willing, even though she's very upset about the relationship at least 50% of the time, is she willing to stay in a relationship where they're constantly fighting about this over and over and over again, and where he may, in fact, not be willing to figure out what it is that's going on with him where he seems to be, and not seems, where he is so uncomfortable with affection and the expression of emotions. So I guess we're going to have to see really what happens. And that kind of takes me to a place where, you know, I've been watching a number of shows on television, and there is one, and I think it would be interesting for you to tune in. The show is called Love, Sex, and Goop, and this is Gwyneth Paltrow's show. And there are 5 experts, 6 episodes, and 6 couples who are all being extremely open and extremely vulnerable in trying to figure out how to improve their sex lives. And Jim and I, we watched a couple of episodes, and the focus really was on a variety of different sexual techniques, energy, touching in certain ways. And as I was watching this, I found myself getting angrier and angrier, because if you're looking at issues, if you're looking at depression, if you're looking at sex, we need to figure out what these problems are all about. And of course, you know, trying a variety of different sexual techniques and including energy, I mean, I'm all for that. But there are so many other things to ask ourselves when couples are having problems in the bedroom. You know, again, for example, one of the first things that I would ask, and that I do ask when I see couples who are having problems in the bedroom, is whether or not one or both people are suffering or have not dealt with their depression or anxiety or body image problems, or whether or not their religious beliefs or sexual abuse or substance abuse. You know, what is it that's going on with the individual who are having difficulty relaxing and enjoying sex? So again, it goes back to the individual first. And then secondly, if somebody is not wanting to have sex with their partner, let's say one person wants it and the other person doesn't, the most logical thing that we have to look at is the relationship, the quality of the relationship. Is the relationship healthy and satisfying? Because at least I'll tell you, as a woman, if we are not feeling close to our partner emotionally, if we're angry, if we're disappointed, if we are upset, most women, the last thing that we are going to want to do is jump into bed and having sex. And this is why, and I've mentioned this before, that women are finding the hookup sex so disappointing and sexually frustrating. And I will routinely receive emails from college women. And they are surprised that they're not having satisfying sex and orgasms with their hookup partners. And this is not a moral, this is not a moral issue for me at all. It's very bottom line. And my response is why would you be surprised when you are with someone who you don't really know, and they certainly don't know you? Why would you think that a hookup would really care about why you were sexually satisfied or not? So again, we have to look at what is going on and what is not going on in our relationships. And I think that techniques and various different positions and energy and all of that is wonderful, but there are other issues that have to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved to understand why a couple is having sexual difficulties. Something that was also not mentioned that was really frustrating for me as I was watching the episode, what about the sexual side effects of a multitude are prescription medications, including antidepressant medications and anti-anxiety medications and high blood pressure medications and cholesterol medications. So these are things that also have to be looked at because they get in the way of arousal. They get in the way of being able to experience orgasm. Now, I am not suggesting that you should stop taking your high blood pressure medication or your cholesterol medication or your antidepressant, but this is something that you need to look at it. And since we're not MDs, you need to discuss this with your doctor, because sometimes a change in the kind of medicine and the kind of dose that you are on can make all the difference in the world. So I was very upset that none of these issues were even mentioned. And of course, the sexual side effects of alcohol, pot, and other drugs. I mean, the fact is that these drugs do, and they can affect our ability to not only have an orgasm, but they can and do affect arousal, desire for sex. So we have to be savvy. And I think that a lot of people watching these shows, I mean, we want a quick fix for everything in our lives, but it is about getting to the root of the problem. And getting to the root of the problem, we've got to do a little bit of digging. And what about the challenges of illness and physical problems? I mean, people have cancer, there's heart disease, there's hysterectomies, there's pain. Again, we have to talk about these things because they are real and they can and do affect our sex lives. And of course, if people are dealing with a lot of illness and physical problems, we can't always touch and kiss and caress. The other thing that was not mentioned, and I was really bothered by all of this, menopause and you know, hormone replacement for men and women. And of course, for women, we know as estrogen levels decrease, all right, and progesterone and also testosterone for women as well, so does our desire for sex. And with low estrogen, a lot of women that I see, they experience not only vaginal dryness, but vaginal pain as well. So these are the kinds of conversations. And if people are actually seeing a sex therapist, I mean, these are the things that do have to be talked about over and above physical and sexual touch. And these are issues that have to be discussed with your doctor. And what about erectile dysfunction? And of course, that was not anything that was mentioned on the show. And maybe it really was a non-issue. You've got to get a diagnosis. You got to figure out, why is this man having difficulty getting and maintaining an erection? And of course, in our quick fix culture, you know, the first thing that most men would want to do is, all right, I want to go to the doctor and get a prescription for Viagra or Levitra or Cialis. But my first question, I mean, and that may be all very well, and millions of men around the world are in fact successfully using the Viagra and Levitra and Cialis. But there's a question that needs to be asked. Again, getting to the root of the problem. Is there nerve damage? Is there a blocked vessel? Is there depression? Is there performance anxiety? What about alcohol? What about drugs? So again, we want the quick fix. We don't want to have to dig. We don't want to have to look at the root of the problem. We just want to make everything right today. But as you're going through a process of trying to understand, it's just like with a disease, there are a lot of tests, there's blood tests, there's MRIs, there's a multitude of tests that doctors use to figure out what is it that is causing the particular problem or the particular illness. And that is exactly the same as it is in looking at sexual dysfunction and looking at sexual difficulties that so many different couples actually experience. What about premature ejaculation? And I have found that it is really a pretty easy problem to resolve. There are techniques that I teach people all the time. And of course, I never touch anybody, but I am able to describe in detail what men need to do. And if they have partners that are really wanting to work with the men, I'm able to teach the partners exactly about the stop-start. There's a technique called the stop-start technique and also the squeeze technique. And of course, there are numbing creams. And, so the thing is that we have to be, really, I think, so consumer savvy, and not just in the mental health field or in the sexual arena. If we are having either emotional problems or physical problems or sexual problems. And when it comes to women, of course, being a woman, I can really attest to at least what I have found, what we women want sexually. Listen, men, and your sex lives with your partners, especially if you're, a heterosexual male, can really do an amazing turnaround. I coined a phrase many, many, many years ago, and as soon as you hear it, you're going to know exactly what it is. It is emotional foreplay. Emotional foreplay. I love you. I'm happy to see you. Good morning. Goodbye. You're beautiful. You're great. I appreciate. Can I help you? This is what emotional foreplay is all about. And it really makes all the difference in the world. And if we're talking about physical foreplay, like my young patient that I actually Zoomed with last night, 3 or 5 minutes of physical foreplay, sexual foreplay, man, it is not going to do the trick. So that the majority of women, of course, there's always variation, require between 10 and 15 minutes of manual and oral stimulation. That is just the way our bodies work before we're in a position to feel sufficiently aroused and ready to have intercourse. And I wonder, the men who are listening right now, what do you think about this? I wish I was doing a live presentation so that we could, we could look at each other and then we could have some real live, interaction. And the other thing is to try and be adventurous, and so important. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want. So the importance of communication, and maybe you want to try some vibrators or some pornography or some new lubricants. The thing is that you want to do whatever it is that turns you on and turns your partner on, as long as you are both comfortable. And of course, I am underscoring this, as long as you are both comfortable. And, in our crazy, crazy, day-to-day lives, everybody is busy, running around. What about, making dates for sex? Honey, I am really looking forward to seeing you later on tonight. I know you're busy. I know you have a class to teach, but, what about maybe around 8 o'clock? Why don't we just listen to some music and maybe take a shower, either separately or together. And I can't wait to make love with you. Because the fact is that if we are always waiting for the perfect time, it may rarely, if ever, happen. So this is why I'm constantly talking about, Nike's commercial. the just do it. Just do it. If you're finding that you have blocks in your life, the depression, the anxiety, and you've been just ruminating for months and for some people for years, should I get help? Should I not get help? I'm not feeling better. I love this powerful message of just doing it, because you know what? It's really amazing. It's really amazing what can happen. And again, I would love to hear your comments. You can always go to my bdcone.com website, and it'd be great to hear what your experiences are and what you think about some of the things that I am actually talking about. You know, last week we ended the show and I was not able to go through 13 different things that you need to think about if you are planning to find a therapist. Because I received a letter. This is somebody that wrote me through Dan's paper. And of course, I'm the new advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons. And I'm just going to read you very briefly the woman's letter. Dear Beattie, I'm a 45-year-old married woman with 3 teenage children. I've been depressed for many years, and I'm thinking about seeing a therapist. I'm very well known in the entertainment industry, and I'm not comfortable asking my friends or family for a referral. Can you give me some suggestions about how I can go about finding a therapist who will hopefully be able to help me? And this is Rebecca G. from Sagaponack and from New York City. So I write, Dear Rebecca, I'm impressed that you finally decided to get some help, since it's too difficult and unnecessary to deal with life's ups and downs on our own. And choosing a therapist, and I really believe this, can be literally one of the most important decisions that someone can make in their life. And it does have the potential for far-reaching consequences, both positive and negative. We need to be very consumer savvy. Because more and more people today, they are seeing therapists for a variety of reasons, including, of course, depression and loneliness and anxiety and bipolar disorder and substance abuse of various different kinds, and sexual abuse and relationship and sexual problems. And it is, when you think about it, it's unrealistic to think that the average consumer will know how to go about choosing the right therapist. And yes, we need to be very, very careful who we are going to trust to put our life and our relationships, you know, into somebody's hands. So here are some suggestions. Everybody that is listening right now, and of course, Rebecca G. from Sagaponack in New York City, here's some suggestions to help you find a therapist that is right for you. Number one, really important, get a referral from someone that you trust, and do not, please, please, do not be taken in by the splashy ads and the television appearances or likes on the internet. And also remember this, that your best friend's therapist may not be best for you. So I think it's important. And even though, Rebecca, that you are not comfortable, you know, asking somebody, family, friends for a referral, you know, if you have a doctor who you like and who you trust, this is not to be embarrassed about. You are doing exactly what I encourage people to do all the time. And that is acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the issues that get in the way of our life and our relationship. So that's number one. Number two, and again, please, for those of you who are listening to the show right now and you're thinking about getting therapy, please take this in. Make sure that the therapist who you choose has considerable clinical experience and specializes in your particular problem. Now, I'm going to say something that is really and it wasn't self-serving for me, but when I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill University in Montreal, and I came out of my postgraduate training, yes, I had the training and I had the degrees, but let me tell you, I would not have gone to me at that point in my life if I had significant problems. I was new, and I understand that people have to begin at the beginning and we all need to give everybody a chance. But I would want, if I was going to see a therapist, I would want to work with somebody who had considerable 10, 15, 20 plus years of clinical experience and who I knew specialized in my particular problem, because it's not possible to be an expert in everything. And the other thing too, you want to ask yourself whether or not you would prefer working with a woman or a man. So there are a lot of things that you have to ask yourself, a lot of things that you need to research. Number three, my friends, you need to check, and we're able to do this very easily on the internet, you know, his or her license, and make sure that there are no past or pending malpractice complaints filed against your therapist. And I know that this is something that probably nobody would think about, but it's important. Number four, your first session, you're going to the office, you're nervous, you're hopeful, but you need to expect that your therapist is going to ask you a lot of tough questions that include your family background. I mean, hopefully your family background, your relationship history, your sexual history, previous psychiatric problems, including possible hospitalizations, suicide attempts, thoughts and gestures, medications that you take, prescription and over-the-counter medications, possible addictions, history of sexual abuse and sexual assault, if any, affairs, and of course, gender identity issues. Now, I can tell you that many of these questions, it's the first session. And when I do an initial evaluation, I try to get people to stay for a lot longer than an hour. And I have found over the years that people are able to afford to, and they have the time, that longer sessions, sometimes lasting 2 or 3 hours, initially, you know, can really make a difference in getting all the information that the therapist really requires, so that you're really not just stop starting and at the end of the hour, and make sure that it's going to be a 60-minute hour and not a 45-minute hour, as many, many people do here in New York. You know, there's a lot to think about, and there is a lot to talk about. And many of these questions you can expect are going to be very difficult for you to answer. And yet it is vital for the therapist. We need to know these facts so that we're going to be able to make an accurate diagnosis and come up with an effective treatment plan. And this is only possible if the right questions are asked and that your answers are truthful, so that you're not going to a party. This is serious business. This is serious business. And, you know, hopefully your therapist is going to be sensitive and that you're going to, over time, you know, begin to have a pretty high degree, you know, level of comfort. And talking about comfort, you want to ask yourself after the first few sessions whether you are comfortable with your therapist. And don't expect a strong level of comfort instantly, because like any relationship, it takes time for trust to develop. However, if you continue to feel uncomfortable after several sessions, remember that there are other therapists, and don't beat yourself up and don't blame yourself. I mean, you feel what you feel, with whom you will be able to connect, and that there should never be any inappropriate advances, sexual, verbal, or otherwise, that occur between you and your therapist. Moving along, and this is number six, Does your therapist respect your time and call you back within 24 hours, including evenings, weekends, and holidays if necessary? And I tell you that I have learned over the years is that if somebody calls, if somebody emails, I mean, I feel that it is the right thing to do professionally and just as a human being to get back to the patient as quickly as possible. And the fact that the health insurance companies, by the way, often poorly reimburse therapists and psychiatrists for outpatient mental health should not be your concern. You want to work with someone. You deserve to work with someone who you can count on, especially in emergencies. And this is a debate that I have had with many colleagues, especially here in New York. This is what I feel. You are entitled to sessions lasting a minimum of 50 minutes, although I do not spend 50 minutes with my patients. I find that longer sessions work even better, particularly in the beginning. And if people are, you know, coming in to therapy, 60 minutes is an hour. That was what I learned growing up in Winnipeg. 1 hour is 60 minutes. It's not 50 minutes and it's not 45 minutes. And my own patients, by the way, find that 2 hour or even longer sessions, especially in the beginning, help to achieve results faster and really move the process forward. Number 7, your therapist needs to have some type of communication, you know, even if it was just written communication with your primary care doctor in order to rule out any physical problems or prescription medications that may be contributing or even causing your mental, emotional, and psychiatric issues. So after a couple of sessions, yes, the therapist, we have a lot of responsibility and we need to take our responsibility seriously. So after a couple of sessions, your therapist should be able to tell you your diagnosis, including a detailed treatment plan. Okay, well, how is this going to play out? And I also believe that anything less than weekly sessions, at least in the beginning, will not give you the best possible momentum to achieve success in your therapy. And if money is a problem, and money is a problem for a lot of people, try to negotiate, you know, give yourself permission and try to negotiate your fee with your therapist or even suggest a payment plan. And I know it is awkward. It is always awkward talking about money. I don't know. For me, I have been open to negotiating fees forever. And so that it really becomes a win-win situation for the patient and also for the therapist. And don't be afraid to ask for what you want. Remember that your therapist, we are not all-knowing gods or goddesses. Number 8, you should ask whether your spouse, if you have a spouse, your parents, siblings, or children will need to participate in your therapy. Because clearly, when you think about this, right, if you're having relationship difficulties, it is essential, assuming that you feel safe, that your significant other participate at some point in your therapy. Now, some therapists only deal with the individual patient and will refer you to a couples therapist or family therapist if needed. This therapist deals with the individual and deals with the couple and deals with the family. But everybody is different, and it may be, and it actually may be in certain situations that it would be better for you and your partner, you know, and or your family to deal with a separate therapist rather than your own individual therapist. So it really is, you know, something that you have to look at on a case-by-case basis. Number 9, lots of homework I'm giving you, right? And you're going to be able to listen to all of this tomorrow in the PRN archive section, because I'm throwing a lot at you right now. So in my professional opinion, your therapist should fully understand your family background and help you see how the past has affected your current situation and problems. And even though we cannot change our history, it is vital for you, the patient, to understand, and I think it's also vital for the therapist to understand, how and why you may have learned your self-destructive, self-sabotaging, or destructive behaviors. This will help you learn to be mindful about living your life in ways that are in your best interest moving forward. So there is a lot that goes into a successful therapeutic relationships over and above having a therapist just ask you, how are you feeling? I mean, that's important too, but there's a lot more that needs to happen in a successful therapeutic encounter. Number 10, ongoing evaluation is necessary in order to determine how well or how badly your therapy is going. And expect at times that you're going to feel considerable pain, since effective therapy helps you take a hard look at yourself and your life, both past and present. Number 11, the question of medication. It often comes up. And although no one likes to go on medicine, there are certain clinical situations, and people can debate this, but what I have found over the past 35 years is that there are certain clinical situations that absolutely, absolutely require a combination of medication and psychotherapy. So please, if you fall into one of these categories, you know, if you're bipolar, if you're schizophrenic, please don't beat yourself up. If you found that massage and acupuncture and energy healing, and I love all of these modalities, okay? Sometimes they are not going to do the trick. So if the meditation and the vitamins and the exercise and the healthy eating have not helped to alleviate your symptoms, I hope that you are going to be open to the possibility of at least trying some medication. Because look, brain chemistry is very, very complex. So we need to let the experts, of course, the right experts, you know, really do their jobs. And if you find that you do need to go on medication, please, please find a skilled psychiatrist, okay? Not a dermatologist who specializes in psychopharmacology, who will be willing to work with you to ensure that you are on the right medication and the right dose. And I know that I'm really throwing a lot at you right now, which is why it's great that the Progressive Radio Network, that we have an archives, because these are things, if you are somebody who's actually planning to find a therapist, this is a show that you really do need to listen to just, you know, more than once. Number 12, successful therapy depends not only on your therapist's expertise, but also how much time, work, and energy are you, the patient, you, the person, are prepared to put into your therapy. In my own practice, as an example, I assign homework after every session for individuals as well as couples, because you know, the therapeutic process, it's not an hour a week or even 2 hours a week. I mean, I really want people to be very, very mindful of their behavior, what it is that they need to be doing on a day-to-day basis that will help them to improve the quality of their lives and the quality of their relationships. And number 13, finally, and this is something that is important, remember to spend at least as much time researching your therapist as you would deciding on which car, computer, or cell phone to buy. This is a very, very important relationship. And again, I think that, you know, beginning to look for somebody, and I think you need to start with, you know, asking around, if you are comfortable asking around for referrals. And if you don't feel comfortable, you know, asking friends and family, I definitely would start with your primary care physician or a gynecologist. And it may be that you're going to have to go through a couple of rounds, because the chemistry is also very, very important. I mean, you can see somebody who has all kinds of degrees and all kinds of experience, and yet after a few sessions, you're just not feeling it. You're just not feeling comfortable. So you have to trust yourself. You have to trust yourself. So maybe the first therapist who you have found, that is not the person who's going to really do it for you. And that's okay. That's okay. So, you know, I'm really, really hoping that these 13 tips, those are a lot of tips that I have just given you, that they are going to be really, really helpful for you. And, you know, if any of you have any particular questions, you know, for me, you can always email me. You can always reach me through the Progressive Radio Network. So again, we don't need, and I say this over and over again, to navigate life's issues on our own. It's way, way, way too difficult. And I think what's happened more and more is that people are really, I think embracing the subject of mental health in a way that we never have before. And this is all good. This is all good. I mean, for years and years, you know, we've been comfortable or more comfortable talking about our migraine headaches. And yet, when you talk about migraine headaches, you have to wonder, what are the migraine headaches really about? Are they about stress? Are they about depression? So again, in embracing and giving yourselves permission to not only talk about mental health, but to educate yourselves about mental health. I mean, it definitely, and I've seen this for all these years, I've treated thousands of people. I mean, it can completely change your life 360 degrees in ways that you could never have imagined. So here we have another hour come and gone. Where did it go? Here on the Ask B show. And I want to leave you, as I do every single week, with my two messages, my homework assignment for you. The first, of course, is to be mindful and to do everything that you can possibly do to do what is in your best interest and to embrace yourself and love yourself, because it's true. Our love relationships, they really do need to begin with ourselves. And secondly, in this crazy world of ours, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So again, I want to thank you all so much for listening to the Ask BD show every single week. And of course, my producers at the Progressive Radio Network, thank you. Thank you. You're always there. I really appreciate it. So I will talk with you next week and every week, Mondays live from 3 to 4 PM right here on the Progressive Radio Network. So have a good rest of the day. Have a good week. And we'll be together again next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.